and start watching it from that day forth. When the wind finally blows it and the leaf wiggles, it's about 30 days from that point on, or the first full moon. And if you look up today, a green corn dance started about the same time as that fingernail moon. I don't know what position it is now. So they started it. So the Otter Clan is in full progress, maybe ending today. Since it's political, they were the groups that noticed their corn first. So the next group just changed it to a little bit, a couple of days later. So now that what we call the Bird Clan group or the Tiger group is doing their green corn dance starting about Wednesday, what it amounts to. The Chigapusnijali, who was the Creek or the Muscogees, as you might know it, their corn did not penetrate, come out of the ground and start wiggling until about a month later. Why? Because it gets hotter down in southern tip of Florida than it does 150 miles away. It's just a natural way of how the earth and the sun rotates. So finally the sun started coming up towards it, heated it, and it sprouted. So about June, they finally figured out it's going to be like June 14th or somewhere in that neck of the woods. One of the songs that we sang there was called the Wichagaleshki, and it's called the Firefly Dance. It's a first 2-3 days of it is like a folk festival where we sing and dance and try to remember the old legends and stories and chase the girls and the girl chase us around, all that kind of stuff. You know, it's a good old time. And one of the songs is that we sang a while ago. It says, "Hano yale we hano yale." It means there's a little firefly out on the edge, and he's blinking. Hey, yah, hey, yah, we, yah, he's blinking, he's blinking. There's a firefly out on the edge, and they're blinking, and they're blinking. And then, throw it through. I mean, how does he go? And he goes, "How you on your one? This is the way." So this is why we finished the song going, how does it go? This is the way. How does it go? This is the way. And we'll go around in a circle for about 40 minutes doing that one song sometimes. As when we came back, one of the greatest things or disasters that almost took place in my tribe was that nothing to do cutting down of religion or anything, but everybody always wants to, like, I may want to make you become a certain way for some darn reason why it's not natural, but it happens. Religion almost killed our culture down. And the first group that came to us, foreign religion, was like Catholicism. And the only thing the Catholic-type people back in those did not like about our ceremonies is there was a lot of bloodshed. Death was sometimes imminent out there when you're playing a lot of ball games and you club a guy to death, but it was part of the routine. So back in those days, it was sort of an accepted-type thing. Today, you can see blood and you go, ooh. But when you're killing a deer and gutting them out, I don't see you say, ooh, or cutting that meat, you stick it in your mouth and look like cannibals. So back 700 years ago, it must have been accepted, but the Catholic that came here says that is the only barbaric thing that's taking place. And we'd be playing out there and club somebody to death, drag them off the field, bury them somewhere, and continue the ball game. Good old days. That was the only thing that they didn't like. So almost 400 years later, Southern Baptist crept in. That's the one that you can have sex standing up, but you can't dance. Because if you do that, you'll lead a dance, and that's the sort of mentality and beat the heck out of the pulpit. And so, but when they heard us speaking our tongue, doing our native dance, what took place is they said that you must believe this way because this is the way the Bible says. And next thing I know, a lot of our people went towards that way to the new thing and almost killed our particular culture out, even our native tongue. And this is just yesterday that I'm talking about, anywhere from 1900s up to about 1968. So a couple of us guys went to Vietnam and came back, had a good old time there. Came back and we noticed one thing, that our culture was dying. There's not too many people that could sit out there today and talk the native tongue, because if you have the native tongue, you can tell secrets to each other, right? Well, anyway, tell legends and pass it on. So one more fellow by the name of Joe Frank, he's from the Panther Clan. We got together. We were both in some sort of reconnaissance, like a special forces outfit. We noticed it immediately. And we went at it to change our culture back and start reverting it. And it took us about 5 years to get our people back to that stomping ground, learning their folk songs, learning the legends and stories and some astrology and why leaves turn a certain way, why red ants and black ants will always fight each other, and humans will never be at peace as you wish you could have. That's been instilled in your brain to say, let there be peace one day. There will never be peace as far as we're concerned. We just have to learn how to harmonize and stick together without hurting each other. So it took us about 5 years to this. When we first came back from Nam, went to the Green Corn Dance, what we saw was about 70 people around the fire. And around the fire, in our legend, it says that your culture will be dead when the creator at that setting of the stars looks through and peeks down. If there's the fire supposed to have been lit, if it's burnt out, your culture is dead. It doesn't mean the world is ended, but that particular type world has ended. At this particular point, when he looked down, there was a fire built with one man sitting and trying to maintain a certain culture. It was a little bit better than that. But today, out of the 2,300, at any given time during our Green Corn Dance, you will find that there's about 1,500 people around a campfire dancing and celebrating. Once they knew this had nothing to do with sacrilegious. Only the last day becomes a religious day. And it's almost sound like any other religious type thing that I see people, if you're in a Catholic type thing, they start off by saying in the mystery of faith of something. They do the same thing with us. We don't know, but it's in a simpler form of tongue. It just says we don't know how we came here, but we do know there must be something of a great supreme that made the air so we can breathe and walk. They'll start off with those kind of words, and then it ends the day after the festivities. So our culture is back. We're having a good time teaching our kids now. Some of the things that the tribe has gone through years ago, this was the general neck of the woods that I know that the different type of people that live here, and I'll just refer to it as people because we may not have been known as Seminoles then. Many of the different type of people were in this country, and this great Hachi that comes through and meanders all the way to the Gulf, I'm not quite sure where it comes out of, but we call it Aguane. Aguane Hachi. About 200 years now, I think you have heard it as Shawnee. Some guy who built this thing probably couldn't say Ugwane. It is in the Chigapushnijati, or one who speaks different tongue, and the name means willow tree river. There's a lot of willows that they use around, that grows around us, and this is what it is. So they call it Willow Tree River, Aguane, Hachi. And then next thing I know, there's old James Cagney, how I love you, old Shawnee, you know. But it is known as Shawnee today, but in the old shaman Indians, it's Aguane. So if you ever want to just joke around the real name, you go Ug all the time you see on TV. You put knee, ugly knee or Ugni. That is the true name of that river that we're on today. I guess during the military days or whatever took place, that's how many of the people went down south. But there were people down there. Some people call them Kalushas, Chakastatis, or Awayachatis. I'm not sure about the Kalushas or Tequestas and all them, but I do know about the Awayachati. Awayachati is a group of human beings. Another people that's known as Awayachati, whom you may refer to them as Arawak. These people live down in the islands, canoe makers, and I'm not sure which island they live on. There were many people who lived, there was other stories that we know about that lived in the water, made their huts in the water. And about 3 years ago, I had the opportunity to find out who they were, where one day it was just a mere legend. Today I met them. I can't even remember what their names are, but they're down in Venezuela area. So our people are mixed with all kind of human beings today, with the Africans, Spanish, just about all races. I think I'm part Irish, but my grandmother said I look like a gorilla more than anything else, so I'm not quite sure which one I am. You have any questions at this point? Yes. Yes, we are. By holding them in my arm. Hey, you little ugly thing, you know, that kind of stuff, and changing his diapers and it stinks, and you know, and while it's going up, while you're in the shower, tell him the parts of the body, and he'll get tickled, and you'll be. That's how you teach. You do not put it in a, this is a verb and pronoun and adjective. It's taught right at the home, so they know all the curse words in our language before it gets there. And then they listen to this college-educated guy, don't even know how to talk about our language. That is the way it's taught. But we are going to try to do, for those people who lost it, from about 19... 19- for children that was born between 1950 to about, let's say, 5 years ago, the ones that were brainwashed that your ways is paganistic, you must learn Jesus Christ, and they drown them and bring them back up. Those type of guys have lost their tongue pretty much. So what we're doing is taking their children's children. So that would be a grandchild of one of my stepbrothers, and taking them into school setting, what we call nowadays, for your own convenience, Head Starts. I think they call it Head Starts. I don't know what they got out here. But we take their children, and the mother naturally wishes to get away from there. I don't think all mothers are like that, but that's what it reminds us. It's a dumping ground for mothers to play around that day, or maybe work. We want those children at that time, and our educators are now, as the grandmothers, guys like me, Billy Cypress like himself, we go in there and take turns babysitting, watching the children, changing the diaper, bathing them, and we're literally going to start forcing them to do that because we don't want our tongue to disappear. I would say about 50% of the tribe is very, very strong. The Miccosukees, they're doing excellent. They make us jealous over the Seminole tribe. They have an education system that they mandated. And look at there. I walked through the woods a while ago, and I got a friend crawling around me, a tick. Anybody want it? But anyway, the Miccosukees, Billy Cypress, not this Billy Cypress, but the chairman, Billy Cybers of Miccosukees, they are doing magnificent. I have to hand it to them. When about 20 years ago, Seminoles are advancing, ladies and gentlemen. They are now driving Rolls Royces and Corvettes, and they're living in condominiums, and they're paying their electric bills and paying their taxes. Isn't that fantastic, Uncle Sam? Yay, Miccosukee said. Heck with you to throw the middle finger to the Uncle Sam. We want to live the old ways. But as time went along, they did. Started living in these type situations, learning how to pay their taxes and all that stuff. But they held back. They would not do nothing. And I used to kind of think, since I'm over here listening to a different type of philosophy, I thought, those guys are, you know, poor people, you know, and all this kind of jazz. Today, hats off to them. There's one more group that's out there known as the Independent Seminoles. Hats off to them. They speak their native tongue, and there's a few of them, but they hang in there and harass the daylights out of them. They act like fleas on an elephant, you know. They're tickling you here and there. You got to remember your old ways. And finally, our people are starting to listen. But not too long ago, they were getting to be, they're Indian. They were apples, as we call them. They were red, but they were white on the inside, is a good general term. So, but the old timers, they were apples. But boy, they were kind of laughing because once they come home and take their coats and tie off, do the old way. I don't know. That's a long answer, but. Yes, it is. Miccosukees, above all people. I've seen it in their stores, and they'll sell it to you for $2-3 for that thing. We have not done that yet. Any other? Our lives? Yes, it is. Let me introduce a gentleman right behind me. This is Billy Cypress. This gentleman is in charge of our museum, Atahliki Museum. Do we have a place here today with that type of art? What is it? Telling about our museum anywhere? We have a setup. Where is that at? At the Seminole camp towards the road over here, there would be a little place where it'll tell about that. And yes, we are. We're doing it. Everything from woman doings that should be secret is there so the women, and this is only privileged to only women to know. And we have that in our culture. There's a lot of things that women know, and a woman medicine person is much stronger than a man's medicine person because we have a little follow-up. So we will only be taught how to heal ourselves and voodoo this and all this type of thing. But a woman must maintain. If a man dies off, a woman generally still survives. It has been said so by all animals, even the deer population, elk, human beings. To this day, I think if you're a hunter, what do you kill first? The poor male. But you will protect the females so the world continues on, its spirit lives on. So a woman must know her. So we have a certain thing only women document for themselves and women say. And we have it on film, written down. I guess we'll get to Braille pretty soon. Any other? Yes. Yes. I was born in a tourist attraction called a chimpanzee farm. Back in those days, one of the places that people could make money without being harassed too much was at a particular zoo setting or Indian village, they would call it. And my particular one was at Dania Cutoff Canal in Fort Lauderdale and Dania area. And the village was there, and that's where I was born. And this is why I make a joke about being part gorilla. What was your question? Let me... Yes, and so I grew up in a tourist attraction watching people do this at that particular point. I was about 1, 2, 3 years old watching it, so it became part of my forte. If I do not have an Indian chiquita in my yard, if I don't have an alligator somewhere nearby, it's, you know, it's like a mic to somebody. So I still do it, and I will always do it. If I get kicked out of office, I'm back there wrestling in the dirt with an alligator. That's put a lot of money in my pocket in modern day. Pardon me? Yeah, there's a bunch of scars on my hand, but I see a few people around here with back problems. They drove a car and got a car accident, so mine pays my bills pretty much. So. Any other? Yes. You hit it both. One of the insulting things about Uncle Sam again is that I told you about this 2,300 or less than 3,000 people that is here. Back somewhere in the 1800s, maybe a little bit before, they removed a lot of people. Then a lot of people were killed off. It's in the name of warfare. They kill off our theologians, scholars, and whatever the heck we would call them. And so maybe the baby somehow survived and the oldest survived, and then the old dies. And if the young didn't know what was going on by the time these older generations die, you wind up fabricating the new life, learning how to just survive in the new thing. So years later, here comes Uncle Sam again and says, "What do you know about your culture?" And I'll go, "Well, I'm not sure." "You don't know nothing, do you?" I said, "No, I don't." He's probably in the background going, "Good, he doesn't know anything, so we'll put a new cassette in his head so he'll sing the way I do." So it is a transition of different things. Some of the old things that maybe my grandfather had forgotten, someone wrote it down, like the Spanish people when they first came. And some of the greatest histories that I've started finding, and I have to read in between the lines because there are shamans here that teach men different things, and there's women shamans that teach different things. And if this secretary during that time, or whoever wrote it, wrote it down correctly as they see it instead of fabricating it, then we can see what was there. Yes, we do. We utilize other people's documentaries and try to read in between it. One day, here's a fine, simple example. Smoke is utilized by most indigenous people. It doesn't matter if they're in Europe or over here in Africa, to South America, to here. In the old days, smoke was one of the form of transportation. I mean, not transportation, communicating. And they think that when you pray, if you put it in the smoke, it goes up into the air and must go to breath maker somewhere. So here was a man that you may know. They used to call him Ashinyahola, but they've shortened and call it Ashiola. And he was sitting in prison somewhere, maybe in San Augustine, and he asked for some tobacco. And people gave him tobacco. And the person who wrote it down said something in the matter, and he wrote it correctly. Says, "I don't ever recall him being a smoker of tobacco, and yet he asked for smoke, so we were happy to oblige him." The shamans knew automatically what he was trying to do. He was trying to get a prayer up with that tobacco. So these are the things that we start seeing what was going on back in those days. And he was using like alcohol to enhance, to lighten you up a little bit so you can go to the next level of thinking. Today they might call you a wife abuser or something like this. But in those days they used you to lighten up so you can be happy, or sometimes it might make you even worse. So we utilize everybody's things. Like if I met you today and you would say, "Here's a little counting song that was taught to me by an old man." I said, "God, I've heard that before. Thank you very much." How many people from Europe have taught us that? There's a lot of things in Europe that was taken over there for some reason, but they always bring something back to us. So Mr. Cypress here is in charge of our museums, and he's collecting it throughout the globe, different things. They always said Osceola's head was decapitated. So for some reason, I get a feeling it's going to come back in a glass case, and here's Osceola. Ooh, you know. So if you have any kind of little bits and pieces, let us know. We'll write it down, and somewhere the puzzle work will fit back together for us. Was a white man and Indian always fighting each other? No, sir. Even in Florida, there's a lot of misconception that takes place. You only hear in the songs how the white man and the Indian are always shooting at each other. At maybe a different part of Florida, some man maybe looked at another man's wife, and here we go. But it started a war. All these other guys were all getting along fine. Then some military guy has an opportunity to take over some land. One day he has a treaty, but he sees how he can take over this neck of the woods. He just creates a war, one-day war. Next thing you know, it's all BS at some particular point. But the general feeling I get on TV all the time is that Indians and white folks or anybody else were always fighting each other. They never did. But the more hostile ones was the one at the beginning, before the Europeans came here. It was just as treacherous then. Any other questions? Yes. The Tomoquin people? That's another one that's on a paper that I would not even have known. But I'm not even sure what the, however it is pronounced. I'm not sure. Were they mountain builders or whatever? I only saw that in Spanish dialogues and eventually into the modern term languages. I don't know. Let me put it plainly so. Any other? I hope so. If I don't have a heart attack or something. You know. Any other? Yes. Do I speak the Spanish language? No. I can understand all the curse words and all the things that I need to say to you as a man in a foreign country, you know. Besides teaching my sons and my younger children the native tongue, I'm also teaching them the Spanish or a Latin form type language by hiring a Spanish person so they can hear both languages, because I do a lot of traveling south of the United States. And then you go into Europe, and there's a lot of this Latin-sounding language, and if you can speak a little bit of it, you can almost converse. So they're being taught now at an early age, and then after hopefully they get in school or something, they might perfect it. But if I speak Spanish, it's because it's in my native tongue. That I only read. Matter of fact, I never knew anything about Osceola per se in our legends. I never heard it in our legends until I was about, maybe it was all because it was due to my young age then. But as I got beyond 10 years old, I started hearing about the name Osceola. Pretty much I will know what you know, what you've read about him, if somebody wrote the documents correctly. There's only one good source of book that I've seen out there, a woman by the name of Patricia Wickman. Did I say that right, Bill? Pat Wickman. She wrote the documentary book on this person, and the way she did it is she took every documented things that she could find throughout the United States, and she put it into booklet form, military documentation, and that is the only one that I've seen. Everybody else writes these nice little interjected feelings about him, but that's the only one that I know. I'm going to quote Pat Wickman's book, and it's about all, because I don't know. Matter of fact, I'm going to run up there one day and go see that particular cemetery. People did excavate that particular location. They did find the decapitated skeleton. So the answer to your question is it still remains in its proper place at a cemetery, I think, in Sullivan Island or something like that, near Charleston, North Carolina, or South Carolina, one of those areas. Yeah, so it's still there. And why? And somebody will ask her, how come you did not go and pick that body up and applaud it as it going down? That's just a structure of the frame or the meat that hung on it. It's not the brain. So this is why I don't go overboard about bringing the bones back. He's rested in a nice place. So. Yes. No, I don't. But that would have, but I wouldn't doubt it. From what I've seen, what took place in the 1700s in that 100-year stretch to the 1800s and that 100-year stretch to now, look basically like this. Even the houses look like this in that era. So whatever the mindset of those people were then, I wouldn't doubt it. Whoever was down in South America might have brought them up here with them and to see these people. And they do look like anybody that I know on a reservation. Even when I was in Vietnam, they look like somebody in my tribe. And it was kind of hard to pull that trigger until he points it at me, and I didn't care then, you know. Any other?
One.
Yes.
What's the story with the Seminolan Creek? What's the difference?
The Muscogees or Creek, they got their name Creek mainly because they lived around rivers and streams and creeks. So they call them, all human beings live close to waterways. So they call them Muscogee or Creeks, and they speak a different tongue than we do. And then the one you known as Seminoles, they could be Hitchides or any other groups. We speak a different tongue, totally different tongue. The Creeks or the Muscogees became friends with the military or other people quite faster than we did, so they used to try to use them to locate our people here in the forest lands. Only because they probably got along with, like Cherokees, they were great scholars and college-educated type people. They even utilized them to try to persuade us to become the way they were. So that is tremendous. Different. They speak a totally different tongue. It'd be like you and I are speaking, conversing in English, but a person from Russia comes here and he speaks a totally, and we'll stand and go, "What is he saying?" About 1516 is about the earliest recorded in the history books, not because my grandmother said so, but by what I see. That's 1492, somebody says? When those people came and came back again several times back in the 1400s, they tried to use the indigenous people here, and they could not work under this forced labor. Maybe the minimum wage is too low or something, I don't know. So they had to bring people from over there, and from that point on, when the brown skin and the dark skin people got together, it became where they looked like they were already home because of the way we live, the way we do our voodooism, the way we do our medicine. It looked so similar, they bonded immediately. So when the dark skin people had an opportunity to run away, they would join our people and became married into our system. The men married our women, and our men took on the women. Any other? Get off? Oh. Asian blood? We're probably all Asian. Look at Billy. Doesn't he look like? No. See? Look at him. Ah, so he has to be. No. In our legends, it talks about how we got here. There's two legends that is a bit confusing but fun to play with. Let me tell you a legend to let you know how we might have got here, or maybe it's just a pure legend. And we put things into a legend form to try to, pass the button or pass a secret. I love you, and by the time it gets over here, I'm going to kill you and cut your throat or something, you know. But there's a legend that goes, there was a lion one time that was out in the country, and boy, he was eating all kind of animals, including human beings. So all the animals and human beings had a great council to decide how to stop this man-eater known as the lion. And so at this council meeting, people suggested that we must figure out how to eliminate him, send him someplace else, or just plain kill him. So they were all talking, and none of the animals and the human beings could figure it out, except for one wise person stood up and he says, let's go find the trickster rabbit, Chukfalaji, or the lying rabbit. It sounds like lion rabbit, but it means the trickster rabbit. He's a jack of all trades he might find. So somebody went out and found him, brought him back to the council meeting. And by the time they finished telling him what the story was, he took the contract, so to speak, in modern-day terms. He was a consultant at that particular point. And they told him that they wanted to get rid of this animal, and they will give him, back in those days and even today, the greatest prize a man could get for payment is a young virgin woman. Woo, boy, that rabbit like that. He says, I will take two, and I'll eliminate the line for you. He says, okay. So he took the contract, so to speak, and he was walking down this old trail, kind of meandered throughout the territory. And as he was walking, a lion... jumped back and shucked it and wouldn't go near that water, and he was dead.